Good morning. Welcome to the House Committee on Higher Education Innovation and Workforce Development on Wednesday, February 11th. We're going to continue our informational hearing on innovation, part two. We have a good roster of people to help us continue our survey of what's happening in innovation. Let's start with Pat Scruggs, and while she comes up, I'll explain, I'll let her introduce herself, but say that I'm excited she's here, both because of her long history in Oregon, present at the creation of a lot of things that we've already talked about, the Growth Board, Oregon Inc., and the like, and because she has pretty extensive experience working on these issues in other states. So I think she's in a good spot to help us get started today with the both a sort of history and a survey of what's going on elsewhere. Ms. Scruggs, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Chairman, members of the committee, just for the record, my name is Pat Scruggs, and I'm president of Scruggs & Associates. As Representative Reed said, that we are a consulting company that looks at innovation and entrepreneurial strategies and their connection to talent and workforce development, so hopefully something near and dear to this committee. I've worked personally doing strategies in about 18 or 20 states, lucky to be able to then, most of those having best practices of what's going on across the nation. So today what I am here to talk about is how are other states looking at their innovation framework, what is working there, and how that relates to what's going on in Oregon, to give you a perspective and to let you then be able to see the things that you heard on Monday and the other things you'll hear today. What's the framework you might think about? So that's where I'm coming from on this. You have a handout that I pulled together. I want to start by saying innovation is probably now the most overused word that we know about. It's right up there now. Sustainability was a decade ago. Now innovation is this decade, so it is the word. The way that I use it, the way that my colleagues in the field use it in terms of innovation-based economic development, is it is a segment of our economy that represents those companies that are continually bringing new services and products to the market that tend to present economic opportunities for our region. A lot of people find it synonymous with research. That's not how we're thinking about it. We're thinking about it as that segment of the economy that creates some really high wage and rapid growth for jobs and wealth in the region. So when we think of it that way, what we find nationally is about 5% of all the companies are creating the majority of the jobs. So it is true that small businesses create the majority of the jobs, but it's only a segment of those small businesses that are really create the lion's share of the jobs. Those are the jobs that tend to be driven by innovation. And of those fast-growing companies, about 75% of them are less than 5 years old, what we call startups. So a lot of times you hear innovation and entrepreneurship combined. That is why we combine innovation and entrepreneurship together, because what we need to grow those companies are very similar. And you'll hear that. You heard that, Monday. Lost that area. And you'll also hear it today as well. So I just sort of said, so that's why we should care, because we have a small segment of companies that can really create opportunity. And the other thing, coming from a rural community, I want to say that innovation is everywhere. It's not a metro issue. So, for instance, I pulled some stats. In 2013, there were 2,164 patents granted to the state of Oregon to companies, individuals, and universities in 32 of those counties. The four that didn't got them the year before. So the issue about this is it's everywhere, and that to me is a great opportunity. So with these companies, we have them, they're everywhere. And so there I just have that. Where Oregon does well in this innovation continuum is we do well in terms of R&D in our patents in the early stages, and we do very well on the late stages. The value add of our manufacturing, the amount of export that we have in businesses. Where we don't do well is in, and we're falling behind, which is a concern, where we were 10 years ago versus where we are today, we are falling behind on the entrepreneurial side of this. Business starts, the percent of our companies that are fast growing. And so that's where I'm going to focus the majority of my remarks about what other states are doing to fill the gaps that we have here in Oregon. And so on the back side of your handout, what I did was a continuum that said this is what other states are doing in the types of programs. So I segmented that into the three categories of sort of the idea creation, the startup environment, and the early growth stages, and then the more mature growth stages of those businesses. And so it commonly in each of those stages, we'll start with the innovation stage, is innovation tends to be driven and states participate by giving R&D tax credits. You have a bill this session about that and some modifications to that, which I think are actually very good modifications that will help spur even more commercialization. We do university funding. These are things like our signature research centers and the other that you heard on Monday and other translational research. We do some industry R&D, not so much here. The stuff in red on your handout are the things that we do a little bit of here, but not to the extent that other states are doing. And other states also tend to fund a lot more what we call the super skilled talent development, eminent scholar programs, things like that in terms of the R&D side. In Oregon, again, with you have R&D tax credits, the University Venture Development Fund is one of those key sets of first money that can really help translate those ideas into potential new products. And I think that Jennifer Fox from Otrati may mention a couple of those examples. And then, of course, I've already mentioned the signature research centers. When we get to that business startup stage, the things that other states tend to do is they tend to support sort of these regional venture development hubs. And these are organizations that focus on serving those fast-growing, innovation-based companies. And that's different. In a lot of cases, that's different than the small business development centers. But there tends to be in other states a very strong network of venture development organizations. And it's also supported by seed capital that's connected with advisory services. And a lot of that work comes from the Oregon Growth Board that we have here in Oregon, and that's really, I mean, that's a very key and important work, especially that early stage funding part of what the Growth Board focuses on. There are things like angel tax credits that other states have, et cetera. And then also, again, another talent part of this, the workforce part of this, is the entrepreneurial and management talent. And having programs to really strengthen that so we have the talent to help those startups get over that initial $1, $10 million revenue hurdle. So that's what other states tend to do in this space. This is probably the place in Oregon that we do the least amount of investments, and we're seeing that we're falling behind exactly in these metrics. And just to give you an example, is we do have incubators here. A lot of them are self-funded. There is one of the, an example of a regional venture organization would be RAIN, that I think you heard from on Monday, right? But that's in one region. And in most other states, those are in, you know, different regions. And they look differently in different regions because every region of our state will have a different need. And then on the business growth side and on the more mature growth side, the state, we have a lot of programs through Business Oregon and others, and I think we're pretty stable there. So I'm not going to really say too much about those programs because that's not really core in here. So the thing I want to leave with is a couple of things of what we've sort of learned in the field in the last 10 years is the handout that I gave you have the pieces that people fund, but it's the combination that we found was really effective in other states, the states that are growing these businesses. And we found that capital alone helps, but it doesn't really move the needle in terms of business success rate. That if you only provide capital, businesses fail almost at the same amount they fail, you know, the only, you know, two out of every three businesses fail every, you know, within the first 3 years, those statistics. Capital alone doesn't really help that. When you combine capital with advisory mentoring services, this entrepreneurial ecosystem of support, you can actually turn the tables, and the research is showing that for those programs, 2 out of 3 are not only surviving 3 years, but 5 to 7 years or more. And so you can really turn the table with that combination. And so that's why that's really in there. And the other thing is, it's about funding the continuum. You can't fund the first part and the end part and not do the middle part. And so that brings me to the final point, is it's about the proportion of the funding among those. And there are, you know, there is a way of saying, okay, great, if we're doing this much in the innovation side, you know, there are some sort of metrics that say you should be supporting about this much on the entrepreneurial side, et cetera. And so those are sort of my takeaways. My final comment, and the final thing I would like to say, is there is a framework in the state to do this, and so I think there's a real opportunity to move ahead now and to say, hey, how do we take what we've learned, the investments we've made to date, and start to fill the gaps? So when I go back to the existing framework of the Oregon Innovation Council, the existing framework, which is on the last handout, the last page of the handout, is the part of the duties was not only signature research centers, but also stimulating seed and startup capital and developing the entrepreneurial and management capacity of the state. And so as we fill those gaps, I'm excited that there is a framework and an opportunity to do that in this state as we move forward, and that I see you have some key bills before you this session, the R&D tax credit, the University Venture Development Fund, the State Innovation Plan, I think that was House Bill 2288, and others that really start to fill out the framework to be more effective. So thank you for your comments.
Thanks. You've given us a nice preview for some of the bills we'll hear on Friday as well. Are there questions from Ms. Scruggs?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here today. Great testimony. Appreciate it much. Just a comment and I think a question, but your comment about it's not enough just to provide capital. You need capital plus, you know, advice.
Smart capital, yeah.
Exactly. And it just struck me how we hear that with our success of students, too. It's not enough just to provide financial aid, but they also need help navigating the system to make sure they get the right courses, that kind of thing. It helps them get to completion. I think my question would be regarding one of the bills we have coming up, the Oregon Talent Council, which is a shift from how I think we've tried to assist or lend expertise from what we've done in the past, to where what I like about the Talent Council is that it's very industry heavy. Okay, we're going to put industry people there who have success, who understand how to be successful, and they will be the advisors or have the chief voice in what we do as a state in terms of creating innovation and being innovation friendly. What if you might comment about that, just the need to have people who actually know what it takes to be successful driving the engine, if you will, rather than legislators who want to try to be successful but perhaps really don't know what the outcome is that they're trying to accomplish?
I think that's a very valid point. And the thing, when I had talked about sort of these super skills and the entrepreneurial and management talent, as well as just the growth talent, the Oregon Talent Council to me is modeled after, to me, what I would say best practices around the country in terms of having an industry both led and true partnership. I think the difference that I see in the draft bill or the bill for the Talent Council is that it says industry wants to be a partner, not just an advisor. And I think that's a huge difference, is when you are a partner in this and want to put up your own skin in the game and want to really be there, then I think that will significantly increase that level of success. And so from that aspect, I think the Talent Council is a very good way to bridge the economic development opportunities with the workforce and education opportunities in this state. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Rudin?
This is really a simple question. Thank you so much for putting this on a chart for me, because I'm new to this committee, so a lot to learn. But is there, like, somebody in charge of this system? And I'm not being silly. Is there a CEO for innovation, or somebody that actually really thinks about innovation and is held accountable for innovation on a daily basis? I just don't know.
Not being an employee of the of the state or others, I would probably ask your chair that question.
I think it is. I think it is a good question, and the way I would answer it is to highlight the fact that there each of these kind of silos is not quite the right word for it, but different sort of segments of this, and I think there are people who take responsibility for different aspects of it. But it is kind of that's one of the tensions about this whole area of how much control can you exert over innovation. Part of what makes it work is the freedom for people to explore and pursue ideas and opportunities and so on. So I think that's one of the tensions that we struggle with in terms of policy and in terms of the committee. To what degree do we want to dictate or try to control, and to what degree do we want to try to facilitate the sort of conditions and freedom for those things to emerge?
And it's the facilitation part that I would certainly hope for as we go forward. But I'm just...
Representative, there is in the original intent of the Oregon Innovation Council, and part of the existing statute does call for a state innovation plan, which is outlined on your back, is the very last piece on page 3. And in that, one part of that intent was to say, here are all the activities that the state supports by various agencies, and here's who's responsible for what, and here's how that's leveraged with the private sector. There's a framework, and that's why I said I'm sort of excited. There's a framework to do this, and so it's really about the state utilizing the framework.
Okay, great. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks. Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real fast, thank you very much. Sort of a follow-up to that same question. I was speaking to my Ben Chamber this morning on a radio conference call. Do you go out and talk to the chambers? To me, I've also worked in children's programs throughout the county and the state, and it's always trying to find someone's in trouble, of a child or a family, you refer them to someone. So does the chamber, do you speak to them? Are they involved in this last stage, is helping them market their product and grow the business? Do you work with the chambers?
Typically, in a lot of states, the innovation-based companies tend to work more with their industry associations because they are selling outside the state and outside the country. And so they tend to be more associated with their industry groups. So it's like the food processors, they have really good market support because they do most of their stuff is exporting. Or if you're a technology-based business, or, you'll probably work a lot with the Technology Association of Oregon. And things like that. So there is a combination, tends to be, though, because these are more export-driven companies, because of their growth. Chambers may be I've been gone for 9 years. I've been back for about 6 months, okay, back in Oregon. So I can't tell you what the Oregon environment is currently. What I do know is that there's sort of a tier two partner in most other states, and that the industry associations are key partners for most of these in other states.
Thank you for the comments.
Very good. So if you're willing to stay for a little bit, I suspect that this conversation may be sort of a freewheeling kind of thing, and maybe we could add Heather Stafford to the conversation as well, and get started on hearing from the next region of the state. Okay. Stafford, you want to join us? Please. Let you introduce yourself.
Sure.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me. My name is Heather Stafford. I'm the executive director of a business accelerator in Southern Oregon called Sustainable Valley Technology Group. We're in our fifth year, going into our fifth year, in a what we call a semi-rural area of the state, very geographically isolated, serve about 6 counties of Southern Oregon. Jackson, Josephine, of course, Klamath, Coos, Douglas, and Curry County. So we are currently the only, with the now exception of Klamath Idea and some other business accelerators dedicated to looking for startups, the only business accelerator within about 4 hours in any direction. So have some probably interesting stories. What I put in front of you is really just wanted to give you some perspective on what some of the data is saying. And, you know, you asked a great question, which is anyone heading up these efforts in the state? And I think right now they're collective efforts. I don't know that there's, I know that there's a need for the state to play a role, but we're still all kind of wrestling with what that is. What is the state's role in this? And as Tobias said, innovation is something that you really create an environment and it happens. It's not something that you can force. Right, but you can get out of the way, and you can create ecosystems that allow for innovation to happen. So, what does that look like? So here, what you're looking at is Bloomberg in 2013 found Oregon one of the top five in innovation. And for their perspective, innovation means STEM jobs. It means science and technology degree holders as a percentage of the population, which of course Intel and Intel's partners all skew that line pretty well. Utility patents, government spending on R&D, gross state product per employee, those kinds of things. So we score really high in this area, and you can see we don't have a great deal of number of utility patents or R&D spending. So we're successful in their eyes despite that. So where I think the mismatch happens is when you start looking at entrepreneurial activity, and we end up 38th. So why is this mismatch here? We have great resources. We have great, brilliant people in the state, but it's not translating to successful entrepreneurship. It's not translating to successful startups, which is where the bulk of your brand new jobs are going to come from. And we're also ranked 49th. I don't have to probably talk to you about education, but we're ranked relatively low there. So the indicators for me looking at these numbers is that we're pretty good today, especially with our urban hub in Portland generating a lot of these jobs, but what does the future hold? You know, the future is entrepreneurship. The future is your education. How can we make some investments in that lead to these sustained numbers going forward? The HALO report is an angel report, and there were 884 deals across the entire country totaling $1 billion. So there are sort of two schools of thought here, and I guess I'll get to that in a little bit. But, you know, the difference between ramping up startups and angel investing and venture capital versus sustainable capital and jobs. And I think those are two separate issues. So the top five states, I think this is interesting, by Entrepreneurial Index is actually Montana ranks first. And about 2 years ago, they were 26th.
Wow.
So I think maybe there's some things that we could learn from what they've done. I've been in conversations with the folks that are champions for what they did. So learning, looking at other states, what are they doing to be successful, that kind of thing. California, of course, is up there. Oregon, unfortunately, since 2003, has experienced 11% point decreases year over year in entrepreneurship.
And I think I missed it. I think you said this. This is 610 what per 100,000 adults in Montana?
Entrepreneurs. So, you know, startup businesses.
Okay. Thanks.
The other issue is follow-on funding is how can we use state funds not to build entitlement programs and do the work ourselves, but how do we use those funds to leverage other funds, private and federal dollars? So I wanted to put our ranking for SBIR and STTR, which are technology grants for early stage startups. They're federal grants. They're amazing if you can get them. They're highly competitive. They're great for the kinds of companies, traded sector companies that we're looking at. And we're 20th. And if you look at this chart, you can see that the difference between 20th and first is quite a lot of money. And that's all money that if we more effectively coached and prepared some of our early stage tech companies to tackle this money, would all flow into Oregon. And I don't think it would take much to get to the top tier, I mean, at least in what the data shows. So, and also I just wanted to define entrepreneur. Entrepreneur and innovation get a little bit tangled, and what does it really mean? Innovation gets associated greatly with technology, and you know there's some correlations to that. But you know the entrepreneur really does mean the transformation of an innovation into a sustainable enterprise that generates value. So one could even argue that the ramp up angel investment type of route isn't really an entrepreneur, because the value that's created is only for just a small handful of people. Those jobs leave, that money leaves, generally. So where we at Sustainable Valley and a lot of folks around the state are looking at is how can we create the other kind, the sustainable companies, the one that are they're going to stay, that are going to create industries that we really like to see in Oregon. So I won't talk too much more. This is mostly for your reference, but where we do really well, on the back page, you see two circles and a star. This was in color, but I was at a hotel. They didn't have a color printer. So the star is where we're gaining ground. We do fairly well. I wouldn't say we're at the very top, but we do fairly well in that middle stage. So when you've already built your company and you're ready to launch your angel rounds, your $250,000, $1 million rounds, we're getting pretty good at that. What we're not great at is the early stage, is developing that talent, and where it's really, really risky for them to start a business, there's not a lot of resources for them at that micro seed stage. And then we're also not great at the big follow-on rounds that will help them stay in business, and so they tend to, you know, exits become pretty attractive. These are some examples of sustainable capital in the box versus angel capital or exit capital, ventures and angels versus a lot of these other things. And for some perspective, you know, angels invested $1 billion last year, nationwide $1 billion. And for crowd investing, you know, there's a new law for the state of Oregon, and it allows the 99% or basically every Oregonian to invest up to $2,500 of their own money into startups that they or businesses under 50 employees that they believe in.
It's probably and worth at this point saying for the benefit of these lawmakers, it is a rule instituted by the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The legislature didn't pass anything.
Indeed.
Existing rulemaking, DCBS has done it. It's very encouraging, but if you're like me, searching your mind going, what bill was that? Did we pass it?
Not a bill. We just adjusted some administrative rules, and they're really just adjustments to an exemption that already exists in SEC law. So the federal SEC says you can do what you want in your own state, basically, as long as you don't cross state boundaries. And so that's what we did. And we just defined, actually, Oregon's rules are very, very conservative, most conservative in the country. So entrepreneur can only raise up to $250,000, which actually really fills that gap that we've been looking at. And it also opens it up to a lot of new kinds of companies that haven't had access to capital for a long time. So just for perspective, everyday Oregonians' personal savings accounts, if you took 1%, of that dollar amount is almost $1 billion just in Oregon. So $1 billion of angel money nationwide versus 1% of what everybody in the state could do to help out is quite compelling. And there are 9 companies out there raising money. One of them's met their minimum. We've raised about $60,000 in 2 weeks from over 100 investors. So already Oregonians are starting to participate in a way that they haven't been able to before. So there's some core strategies. I don't know. I'd like to just maybe field some questions, and you can read through this stuff at your leisure.
Great. I think what it might do is Nitin Rai has joined us. I know he's got some other things he's dealing with outside of the building. So if you'd like to join us, maybe you can provide your comments. I know you have to get back to your other obligations quickly. So maybe we can hear from you and then take questions for both of you at the same time. So please stay there, and we'll add to the conversation. Thanks for making it despite some challenging circumstances.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. No problem.
I don't have anything prepared, unfortunately, as a result of this little emergency this morning.
Yes, if you could just start with your name and then perhaps tell us your story. We're kind of continuing our survey around innovation and entrepreneurship and how Thai fits into the overall ecosystem.
Sure.
Would be a great place to start.
My name is Nitin Rai, spelled NITIN.
And I'm sorry to interrupt one more time. Those microphones, most you have to get really close. This one you have to be a little bit farther away, and then it won't distort. Thanks.
All right. My name is Nitin Rai, NITIN, last name RAI. I'm president CEO of a 21-year-old startup called First Insight in Hillsboro, Oregon. And I'm also chair of an entrepreneurial group in Portland called TIE Oregon, TIE. TIE has, just a brief background, TIE has roots in Silicon Valley. It was started by some very successful Indian entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley back in the early 90s with the idea of give back, which included mentoring and angel investment. Since then, it's grown globally. We are now the world's largest entrepreneur group. nonprofit. And our charter is to help entrepreneurs of all colors, all creeds, all across the globe with our mentoring expertise, because we're all, most of us are successful entrepreneurs or folks that are investing in entrepreneurs or entities that are helping entrepreneurs become successful. We started the Oregon chapter in 2007, and we've grown significantly in the last 8 years. In the last 4 years, we have invested in 23 companies with over $3.8 million of our own money. And three of these companies have already returned a very handsome return to our shareholders. Two of these companies were women-led. So we are very an inclusive organization, and our goal has been to not only invest money, and we invest anywhere from $10,000 up north of $300,000. And we've made a significant impact in the ecosystem in the Portland metro area. And we work with OAF and Oregon Angel Fund and Portland Seed Fund, as well as other VCs in town and out of town to help support this ecosystem. You know, my feedback to you all is that Oregon needs to take a really critical view of what is happening today in the ecosystem and what the state can do to really foster this ecosystem and grow this ecosystem. And that will happen with more money, more funds that go into investment as well as the mentoring aspect of entrepreneurship. We really need to take a very serious view of this because we have an opportunity to take this to the next level. In the last 3-4 years, we've really created a solid ecosystem in the Portland metro area, and Thai is, we are going beyond Portland. We're going into Willamette Valley. We're going to Southern Oregon. We're going to Bend. And we're also looking at initiatives to bring entrepreneurs to the state through our network, global network. And that's my
That's great. That's great. Well, the combination here of Portland Metro and Southern Oregon is a nice combo. So let's see if people have questions. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. Thanks for both your presentations, and thank you for trying to get more jobs and more income for Oregon. I asked this question yesterday to some of the people who testified. What do you see the Oregon corporate tax rate and other tax problems as a disadvantage in trying to get companies to stay here after the technology or the innovation is or started? Could you comment on that, please?
I think we have other issues in Southern Oregon, like really great workforce to fill in those jobs, mechanical engineers, programmers, the really your height. So we work a lot really closely with our workforce board to try and get creative about how we fill those gaps. So that's where we struggle. We have land use problems that are probably more of a struggle than actually tax. Tax kind of falls in probably third. I think it's workforce
what
as
the
they
first,
grow.
What are the three then? So
workforce, I think, is first. Southern Oregon is actually about $30,000 or so less than urban regions for the same position. So it's really, really hard to recruit somebody not only to an area like that that's a little bit geographically isolated, but to ask them to earn less and then bring a trailing spouse. And there's some significant issues with that that we're getting creative collectively. So the
Thank
second
you.
One.
So you're saying land use, workforce, and then taxes?
Yeah, I would say probably taxes falls about third in our world.
I think tax is an interesting issue, and I've experienced in India where you know, startups, companies that were coming to Oregon were offered huge tax incentives to come in, and that really helped with exploding the ecosystem. I'm not sure whether tax for the early startup companies is much of an issue because they're not profitable. This becomes an issue at a later stage, and you know, so I'm not, you know, I can't really comment on this early stage.
Yeah,
but that's my point, is we need jobs here for a long time. And so if these companies develop and become very successful, we want them to stay there. A couple of years ago, we came in for a special session to be sure that Nike stayed here because of a tax issue.
Right. I agree with that. As the companies grow and become large, I think having some sort of a tax incentive to preserve jobs in Oregon, to hire people in Oregon. I think that would be a great incentive. Absolutely.
I think there's also an interesting tax implication now that crowd investing is legal or being used in Oregon is perhaps a tax incentive for the investor to participate because there's just so much money on the other side for them. And getting that latent capital moving in the state would, you know, there's access to capital, there's access to great workforce, there's some other issues, and taxes, I think, fall.
I absolutely agree with her. I think folks that are returning capital back to their shareholders in Oregon, if they reinvest, there should be a tax incentive for reinvestment. Absolutely. You'll see the whole angel seal explode if you offer that to investors.
This is great. The Revenue Committee has exploded here in the Higher Education Committee. I appreciate that, and it really underscores the nuance and the detail that's in each of those conversations, a corporate tax rate versus a personal tax rate versus a capital gains rate, how you define all of those things. So it's a rich, rich area, and I like talking about these things, so I won't stop it too much, but we do have some other questions here. Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'd be interested to hear your perspective, both Mr. Ryan and Ms. Stafford, on this. The whole idea of innovation support and all that kind of stuff, I'm kind of new to that, so I'm trying to get my feeling here. But at the end of a long work week, it's 4:30 on a Friday or something like that, what's your gut? Do you think, on the supply of entrepreneurs, do you go home and say, gosh, there's 157 people that I need to help, and I can only help three of them this week, and I feel like I left 154 of them in the dust? Or do you feel like, gosh, there's only three people that I could help out there, and I find myself all week long trying to elbow my entrepreneur support competition out of the way or whatever? So somewhere on that continuum, where do you find yourself?
In Portland, things have really changed. We used to fight for money. Money is not the issue anymore. Now, personally, I feel like we need to, grow from high school level, and we're launching programs that are introducing entrepreneurship into high schools, and also into the sort of the low-income, underprivileged areas. I think we need to open up Oregon for business. We need to change our philosophy and mindset. We need to look at what New York is doing with Startup New York, and I think we need to perhaps mimic some of that to invite entrepreneurs, encourage them, incentivize them to move to Oregon. I moved to Oregon 25 years ago. A lot of us that are right now in the entrepreneur ecosystem moved from somewhere else, and I think we need to encourage and foster that and bring those kinds of people in. Even if we got 50 tier 2 startups from Silicon Valley into Oregon, that has huge impact. Huge impact.
I moved here from Silicon Valley as well, so I'm here in Oregon. At first, so we tried to create something out of nothing, which is an interesting proposition. And at first, we would take anyone, just, you know, a warm body. You have a business plan. You've been through the Small Business Development Center. It's fantastic. Let's work with you. And I think now we're being much more picky. I think if you target mentoring to, and they've gone through some hoops. They've been through the ecosystem at the early stages, whether it's university or small business development centers or their economic development districts, and then they get ready. If you look at business acceleration as a hothouse on a farm, you take your best and brightest and you give them really targeted, tailored mentoring. You help them become investable, bankable, and you know, you get them the connections and the networks that they need to thrive. So not having one of those in a community, not having a greenhouse or a hothouse in a community, is really not, they're on their own, you know, they don't get salaries, they're living in poverty, most of them could probably collect food stamps. I mean, we're talking about very early stages where these folks are really, we need to encourage them to continue to do this because they're the ones that are going to create economic change.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Representative McEwen and then Representative Gallegos, please.
Thank you, Chair Reed. Ms. Stafford, I'm just delighted that you have the wherewithal to do this work down in Southern Oregon. And you talked about the six counties that you have a responsibility for. And of course, I really understand the challenge that you face in bringing a workforce to a community that is outside the metro area, and the wages that you can pay, and the trailing spouse issue, and trying to create a comfort level for people to live a little different lifestyle. Try moving to Coos Bay and do that. or Bandon or Coquille or Mapleton. It becomes even much more of a challenge. And I guess my question to you is, in the purview of your six counties, it sounds like you're fairly Medford-centric, but how do you reach out to those even more rural counties that are very challenged to make sure that those entrepreneurs that are there, which they are receiving the same kind of support that we know happens in the metro area and is beginning to happen in the kind of the subset of the metro area, which is the Medford area, reaches out into those other rural communities?
At first, I think the influence over the past 4 years has just been cultural. It's been being able to dream that there is resources. If you do have a great idea or an invention, there's some place relatively close that you could go. I think we can get much better at supporting each region to be who they are, but be a better who they are, find some champions in those different places and give them a little bit of targeted funding that allows for also follow-on funding, right? So, sure. You know, in a competitive way. But, you know, what works in Southern Oregon might work in Bend a little bit, wouldn't really work in Coos Bay as a strategy, wouldn't really work in Pendleton, right? So they have different industries, they have different resources, and they should be able to make the best use of those. But they kind of have to do it locally.
Yes, please.
And how do you identify those champions, or how can those of us who live in these rural communities help identify those champions who can connect with you and make sure that the kid that has the patent on the light bulb in Coos Bay gets the support that he needs, that if he lived in Medford or Portland would have that support?
And that's not a hypothetical, by the way, is it?
No. It's a real guy.
Real person. Great. I think two things. One would be creating a support system, a network with some healthy competition. I'm a fan of competition. I think it brings out the best in people sometimes when it's rewarded, and having people have to push the edge of what they're doing and just, you know, create a return on investment proposition and how they're going to maximize funding, those kinds of things. You'll find your champions through that process, through that competition process. And then just creating the little bit of targeted funding that helps that, right? Really focused, targeted funding, not just blanket spreading seeds all over Oregon, but there are already places like this person, weave them into a better, more cohesive network throughout the state of incubators and accelerators. And, you know, these start to become industry conversations too, right? So if you've got EV company in Southern Oregon, which we do, how do we weave them into Oregon Best? And then how do we weave them to Drive Oregon? And how do we utilize the Oregon Inc. infrastructure as the bones for the state? You know, how do we be better at that? Because we don't want to recreate everything. It's very expensive.
Sure.
We already have it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Representative Gallegos.
Thank you, and thank you for your presentations. It kind of follows up Representative McEwen's question. I'm just trying to get my head around sort of the link between the higher education. So where are we getting these innovators? And I'm also very interested in and glad that you brought in the notion of sustainability. So we need to think about not just creating these positions, creating these businesses, but also how do we sustain these economies? I grew up in Oregon, so I remember the decline of our traditional industries of fishing and lumber, and I represent the Silicon Forest area, so I'm, you know, very much aware of that transition to technology and so on. But again, you know, I'm just trying to think about where do we get the talent, and how are our universities preparing people for these kinds of positions?
I have a 12 and 14-year-old. They're not going to stay in Oregon for higher education.
Yeah.
That's the way it starts.
Yeah.
And And the 14-year-old already said she's going to leave. And I think so. We have some serious problems on the education side. I spent a whole day in Benson High School the other day because we're trying to launch our youth entrepreneurship program on the side of Portland. It's pathetic. We should be ashamed of ourselves. I was shocked. I thought I was in a third world country as compared to the schools on the west side. So we've got some serious issues just at that level. And as an organization, as a leader of this organization, I feel it's my personal responsibility to make a difference there. And I think that probably applies to schools in other parts of Oregon. We need to start there. And then we can look at what we want to do with the higher education.
We have a high school entrepreneurship program we're doing in Southern Oregon as well. I think that's where it starts. I don't think, you know, and it was actually sort of shocking that when I came in to introduce the program to the intro to business class in Ashland High School, which is a great high school, you know, for Oregon standards, it's a great high school. And we asked, what would you do? What do you want to do? What are you good at? And they couldn't. Nobody could answer the question. Hardly anyone. We heard games a couple of times, and well, what does that mean? How come they're not? How come you're in 12th grade and no one's asked you this question yet? Mm-hmm. Right? What are you good at? If you started your own business, what would it be in? What do you like? What are you good at? It was so, you know, it's an interesting, and it's easy. It's right in school curriculum. You know, we have a business school champion. She's doing all the work. So we're just, you know, trying to get in and help where we can. The question, though, of being ourselves, right, is we are a natural resource-based economy. We're not going to argue that, right? But that's what Oregon has, you know, ninth largest state, and we've got all these resources. How do we innovate the way that we use those, right? Instead of doing it the way we've always done it, how do you take innovation and be who we are, but be a better who we are? And I can tell you, you know, wood and ag and agricultural technologies, as the population grows, these are industries that I don't think are on our radar nearly enough as not just exporting food, you know, supplying our own food, but exporting the technologies that grow food more effectively with water efficiencies and things that are being developed out of OSU, out of private. And also the notion that all of these innovations are coming out of universities, I think, is not accurate. I think statistically, and Pat is probably a better person to give me these numbers, but I think it's under 20% of actual successful businesses did not come out, you know, they only came out of universities, and even lower than that. You know, we talk about patents, only 3% of patents ever get turned into a business, you know, statistically. 3% is really a really low number. So how can we pull on our innovators that aren't coming out of university systems as well? I think our university system, innovation system, is pretty functional. I think the rest of it could be improved. But how do we pull out? Because a lot of the state doesn't have access to a research institute. We don't in Southern Oregon. So we had to get creative. We lean on our industry people to say, well, what do we have? Well, we have a clean room that makes, you know, nanotechnology and Rogue Valley Micro Devices. They put up $150,000 in the use of their state-of-the-art fab to commercialize some companies with us in partnership. How do we do more of that since we don't have the access to the research institute? Innovation can still happen. Just have to...
Just to add on that, back to, you know, my pet peeve about the high schools, there's only one computer science teacher for all of east side of Portland. And we are on the west side, the hub of technology in downtown Portland, we're hub of technology. She's talking about technology in southern Oregon. I think we need to pick some focuses in terms of areas that we want to innovate in. Mm-hmm. Certainly technology is one. Food technology is another one. Apparel is another one.
Sure.
Clean energy is another one. So we need to kind of sit back and say, what are the areas that we want to focus on as a state? And then invest in those areas. And that allows you to expand the investment into other parts of Oregon, not just the Portland metro area.
Yeah
I agree with that totally.
It's a good connection, both I think the point you're making about fostering the sense of entrepreneurship at a very early age and the areas of focus as part of, well, I'm glad you're here to kind of follow on the Oregon Inc. Presentations we've heard around those areas of focus in the process that brings us to them. I think, unless there are other questions for this panel, we're going to continue the conversation. Mr. Rye, thanks again for dealing with your other difficulties. Feel free to get back to them if you need to. We'll continue the conversation and look forward to seeing you again.
Okay.
We've had a lot of conversation or mentions. You guys
okay.
Can go. Thanks.
Thank you.
A bunch of mentions over the last few days about Otradi and the Portland Seed Fund. We're fortunate to have Dr. Fox and Angela Jackson. As Dr. Fox gets settled, Angela, if you'd like to join us too, I like the idea of having you both sitting here because the conversation has, in recent days, mentioned you both in various ways. So Dr. Fox is the executive director of the Otradi, one of the signature research centers affiliated with Oregon Inc., and physically very close to the Portland State Accelerator and the Portland Seed Fund, led by Angela Jackson. So we're glad you're both here and eager to hear from you.
Excellent. Thank you, Chairman Reed, and esteemed members of the committee for allowing me the opportunity to talk to you today. As Representative Reed said, I'm Jennifer Fox, Executive Director of Otradi, long name, Oregon Translational Research and Development Institute, and the Otradi Bioscience Incubator. We are one of Oregon's signature research centers, and we are a nonprofit that is funded primarily by you guys, by the state of Oregon. And our mission is really to fuel economic development of Oregon's bioscience industry by developing and translating innovative ideas and basic research into products and companies that benefit human health and create jobs and companies here in Oregon. And as you can see here on the screen, and I have handouts for you guys too, we have two different parts of our value proposition. We have Otradi Labs. These are specialized labs where we have trained scientists, robotic equipment, drug discovery, implementation tools that don't exist anywhere else in the state, including at the universities. So you can think of this as a core research entity for the entire state. And we have a lab in Portland at our incubator, and we have a lab now in Corvallis that we just opened on the campus of Oregon State University. And the other resource that we have that's unique is we have Oregon's only bioscience-focused business incubator, opened in June 2013. What do we mean by bioscience, right? This is kind of one of those keywords, too, that people throw around. What I mean by it is life science, human health. That could be drugs, that could be devices, that could be new ways of diagnosing disease. And we also include veterinary medicine in this. So we work with folks at OSU to develop new vet meds as well. What do we mean by translational?
Thank you.
Well, our idea of translational is really transforming basic research, mostly at the university level, but also community ideas that are brought to our attention. Into industry, into products and jobs and companies. The basic idea is that scientists and universities are great at discovering things, but they're not always great at developing these ideas into products they get to market that end up benefiting human health. So this, you've heard of the $1 billion night cancer challenge, for instance. Mm-hmm. This is a great boon for our state. But if we can't translate that into drugs that are new cancer treatments, I'd argue, what's the point? And I'm a scientist, so I can kind of say this about scientists and not feel too bad. So our continuum really looks like this. There's university-driven basic research, or as I said, there are plenty of people who are talented who have ideas from the community as well, and we develop those ideas. At Otradi, we provide the scientific resources so that scientists who are adept at doing drug discovery, doing product development, robotics, and all sorts of rate-limiting equipment. We also help people write and review grants. So when people submit their SBIR grants, we walk them through that process. So we have scientists that are on review panels at the National Institute of Health for these grants. So they can say, oh, no, this would never fly with my committee. And we rely on early funds. Like the UVDF fund. Farther along, we help our partners by introducing them to industry folks that can give them further follow-on funding. That includes angel investors, VCs, and pharma or private companies. And we offer incubation through our Otradi Bioscience Incubator, where we can actually have the companies live there with us have access to ourselves, our equipment, our scientists, and have access to the resources that are included at the incubator. So here's an example of a company that started as a university idea and developed into a company that's now at our incubator. We've worked with these guys since 2009. So in this example, there's a research professor at Oregon Health Science University named Andras Gruber. He has a great idea for a new stroke treatment. He thinks, right? He comes to Otrati. We help him develop this into a farther along stage idea that can attract funding from SBIR grants. So what I mean by that is we have our scientists look at his technology. We do experiments that he can't do in his lab. We walk him through writing grants. We introduce him to partners who can help answer his questions. So that's what we do at Otrati Labs. We help him scale up. He was awarded $100,000 by being an Otrati-affiliated company as part of our EDA grant from the federal government. And that really helped them at a crucial time to hire an additional person and buy a piece of equipment. We help them commercialize technologies. So I don't know everything, but I know somebody who knows something about everything. So I rely on my network, and our network is what we call a bio-mentoring network. We helped Andras find manufacturers, legal teams, pharma mentors that could really steer him in the right direction, because the experiments and the plans you make early affect what you do later. And in exchange, when we said we're going to open this incubator, they were the first in. So they were our first cornerstone tenant at our incubator. And they've been wildly successful in my eyes. They have raised $14 million in SBIR grants in the past 5 years. And that's non-dilutive funding. Those are grants from the U.S. government that don't need to be paid back and aren't exchanged for equity. So this is great money for a bioscience company. In fact, they are the third largest recipient of NIH SBIR funds in the entire country. And we're very proud of that. So they were the first company to join the Otrati Bioscience Incubator. Since then, they've made a deal with one of the top five pharma companies in their field. I can't say who, apparently. And this pharma company has put $30 million into helping them go into human trials. So they're entering human trials this year. The idea is that if this works out, this company, who's a large pharma, would license that technology. Huge windfall for the company, and they're already developing their next line of therapies. But we would say, okay, you've graduated from the incubator. You can build out your own space now. So we're hoping this is our first big success very soon. So talk a little bit more about the Otrati Bioscience Incubator. It's a unique space. We have 16,000 square feet. It's on Portland's South Waterfront in the bioscience hub there. We have what companies need, which is shared access to common equipment that's rate limiting, so fume hoods and tissue culture hoods and all sorts of fancy equipment that companies can't afford to buy when they're startups, but they rely on from when they're in university departments. We have technical help. So we have ourselves and our staff and our scientists are co-located there with everyone, and we give them advice. We help them use our equipment. We can have hands-on proof of concept work that we do and help them write grants. As I said, we have a unique biomentoring network. So right now that's 50 professionals or more from across a number of different fields. Not scientists necessarily, but we're talking lawyers, accountants, HR, PR, all sorts of people who will freely give their advice as a paying it forward gesture to entrepreneurs and companies across the state. So we've made a real push to recruit folks from all over the state. Because even though you can talk on the phone or you can Skype with someone, there's nothing like having someone who's done that in your backyard to talk to. And we collaborate with others. So we work with Angela Jackson on the original plan, and we still work together very often. We have networking events. We have CEO luncheons that are really roundtables where people can just say, you know, I have this problem. Has anybody ever run up against this before? And we are an attractive site. So it is... It's a hub. It's a collection of people to prove that this industry exists and is thriving here. And it's been very helpful for me to get VCs and pharma people to come and visit. Because when we just had a lab and we said, trust me, there are companies, there are ideas, well, where are they? You know, they're scattered to the four winds. So we've had two different pharma companies, AstraZeneca and last night Eli Lilly, come in. meet with folks, and this can be anyone from across the state. They don't have to be in the incubator. So give us an idea of what you're looking for, and we'll find who's doing that across the state. This is just a schematic. We opened in June 2013. We were full within 6 weeks, which was even surprising to me. We have six companies there now, and here's our roster. Aranora is the guys in the orange space there. About half of our companies are OHSU spinoffs. We have a University of Oregon spinoff. We have one company that's just an individual from the community that didn't come from one of the universities. In the first year, Aranora and 13 Therapeutics together were awarded a total of $4.8 million in SBIR funding. Our company, Absci, who is a community company who started out at the Portland State Business Accelerator in their smallest lab in the garage, basically.
We heard from them on Monday, too.
Yeah, Sean McClain talked to you guys Monday. They graduated into our group there. They actually, as you could probably tell by Sean, they're a young fledgling company. They've never written an SBIR grant. So they partnered with Aranora, who I just told you guys was one of the most successful companies in the country at getting these awards, which is just tricky. And they co-wrote a grant together this year. And we have one company that actually is making revenue. So there you go. Wow, that's something that's an accomplishment in our field. We ended up having a lot of folks on a waiting list and went to the governor and asked him for strategic reserve funds to build out additional space in the building that came up and was available. And I'm happy to say that he gave it to us. And we're building out and we'll be complete with an additional 3,800 square feet of space in the same building using the same equipment, same shared common resources. This will be open next month, hopefully. I'm in the middle of contractor shouting matches. But we've got 10 bioscience companies that will be in our camp by next month. So we are basically giving opportunities to people on the waiting list and new companies that are coming to us. And we're even creating a shared lab where people can rent a portion of a lab because we got a real demand for people who said, I'm nervous about signing a one-year lease. I'm thinking, well, what can we do even smaller than that? So the light blue lab here, that's going to be a shared lab where people can lease a lab bench. Just get their feet wet. Don't be scared of it. Write their first grant and then have an end to all of the networking that's going on there. What can you guys do to help? I'm very grateful that Otrati's been funded since 2007, and we are back for additional funding for this next biennium. We've asked for additional funds above what we have now to help expand and build. We have plans to help build a co-working space, including lab space, together with OSU Cascades and Bend, to reach out to Bend and to Eastern Oregon, because there's growing bio people there who are doing digital health and all sorts of other things. So that's one thing that we asked for funding for. We asked for money for a small fund, so to be able to give small proof of concept awards to these people who are working hard in the field. And some of our funds that we asked for were for internships and training. So we have a long history with Saturday Academy, high school students that have come and done internships in our lab. And last year, we sponsored a number of these guys to go work with startups. Because how else can we get the next generation of entrepreneurs but to get them to see what is a startup about? How exciting is it? So Sean McClain, who was speaking to you Monday, had one of these high school students in his lab last summer. It was a great experience. And we're also working with Portland Community College, that network, to develop their biotech program because we need technicians. We need people with good hands. It doesn't all have to be PhD professors. In fact, that wouldn't work if it was all PhD professors. So we are trying to build and expand this continuum. We also need, and the companies would say, we need more help with funds to get started. So proof of concept funds and university venture development funds. So we've worked with a number of people who have gotten these UVDF funds over the years, and even though they were a $25,000 award, we turned that into something that could go forward and attract an SBIR grant.
I should break in here and say both of these bills that you're talking about now and the one I think you're going to talk about next are on our agenda for Friday, so you're previewing
excellent.
In a nice way. Thank you.
Excellent. They're very important to us, and they have definitely given us seed to get these companies started and get them in the door, and including R&D tax credit. These guys are basically living on fumes until they get that first deal with a pharma company. And we see this all the time. They come to me and say, please buy this piece of common equipment because we can't afford to have it. And so we are, in response, trying to help them, and I'd ask for your help with this as well. And I'm happy to answer any questions or wait until after Angela's speaking.
Great. Any quick questions for Dr. Fox, and then we can hear from Angela, too. Representative Rudin.
You know, I love what you're doing, but I'm wondering, is there a possibility that at some point in the future that the companies could be funding this program altogether and make it more sustainable? It seems like there's a need for money up front, which the state's been providing, and then there's somebody on the tail end of this is making a lot of money. Can we just grab just a little bit of that and maybe make this more sustainable?
Chair Reed, Representative Reardon, I love that idea. And we're looking into how we could do that. Other incubators around the country will take a piece of equity in a company that's in their incubator. Maybe I'm just was being a bit cautious, but we open the doors, and I feel like you have to make sure and establish your programs, make sure that this is a resource that you've provided that people want and need before you say this is worth a percentage of your company. I think we're at that point now. I think when these guys graduate, we should enter into an equity deal with companies that want to come in next. Because the typical time a company is in a bioscience incubator is 2 to 4 years. So we put a lot of investment into those companies. And some ideas people have floated are to take a 1% equity per year of companies in an incubator. So that is a reflection of all of the value they get from that whole program, because it's not just physical space. They are paying rent on space, but it is more the networking and the connections that they provide. I'm happy to say they're paying fair market value rent rates, and the incubator itself pencils at 80% full, so it's not a drag on what we're doing. Okay. The problem is that extra 20% isn't enough to pay for a full-time person or programmatics or other things. So there's an infrastructure there that may always need support, but I think it's very good idea to have some investment return from companies that do make it.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks. Let's hear from you, Ms. Jackson, and we'll probably have questions for both of you as we continue. So as you're getting settled, someone asked me as we were finishing up on Monday, what's PSF? Everybody kept saying PSF, and I said, wait till Wednesday. So I suspect we're going to get a pretty detailed answer to that.
Okay. Well, Chairman Reed, members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to come here today. For the record, I am Angela Jackson, Director of Portland State University Center for Entrepreneurship, which captures the Business Accelerator, and I want to give a shout out to our new program manager, Joe Monk, who's here today, fresh on the job.
You'll be welcome.
Seeing more of him as well. But yes, I also have a second hat where I'm managing director of the Portland Seed Fund, or PSF, apparently, as it was known. We, just on the PSF side, because I'll mostly be talking here today about the PSU Business Accelerator. Is a private seed fund that has earned the investment of the state of Oregon as one of its many LPs. So we have $10 million under management in Portland Seed Fund to invest in seed and startup companies, of which, you know, sort of a smallish percentage is the state. It's an excellent example of public-private leverage, where the commitment by the state early was able to help us bring in other angels. And we've made 55 investments, also had liquidity events, created over 400 jobs just since 2011. So that form of explosive investment in explosive growth companies, you know, it can be very beneficial.
And LP stands for limited partner, which is essentially just a co-investor.
Thank you.
Is that fair?
Yes, thank you for that. So as I'm hearing the great conversation today, you know, if there's a word to take away from all of this, I do think it's collaboration. So many of the people you've already heard from, we work with closely at the accelerator, but I thought I would dial it back to the more basic level. While I am working in this university environment through the PSU Business Accelerator, I come to it not from an academic background. So as a private practitioner and investor and somebody who advises entrepreneurs, so I've been able to sort of unwind this relationship a little bit between where do universities play a role, where does private sector play a role. And I have my opinion on it, and again, there are many opinions, so I'll just offer mine. You know, I think we forget that Oregon is sort of Wild West in history. We lack the infrastructure and innovation that some older, better funded economies have. That doesn't mean we're going to lose. We just need to play to our strengths. So we're often asking ourselves these either or questions, and the answer is really both. So how do we scrappily build out the entire ecosystem so that we can have a diversification, much like you would put a portfolio together, right? You don't only want bonds. You don't only want stocks. There's some sort of special mix that you want, and we should view that similarly with innovation and entrepreneurship as we build, you know, a vibrant state ecosystem. So I view the role of, well, let's talk about historically. Again, I'm going to talk like a two-year-old for a second, if you don't mind.
Not at all. That's perfect.
Perfect. So in the old days, you had to access the university to get access to the special tools to create the things that your labs and your special equipment would create IP, and a lot of IP needed to be housed through the university. That's historically how things have gone. Largely with the benefit of connectivity through internet, things have so drastically changed over the last decade or two. We are now in a situation where one-year-olds have iPads. I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing.
Better or worse.
But what I am saying is the democratization impact of the internet in terms of who could create the next big thing, it doesn't have to be someone who walks through the hallowed halls of the university. So that's kind of Exhibit A. Exhibit B is, does that mean there's no role for universities? Absolutely not. For one, the kinds of things that Jennifer was just describing, bioscience innovation, that isn't something you can easily be a garage entrepreneur for. You need specialty equipment. It's expensive. If you start having chemicals shipped to your house, you get on somebody's watch list pretty quick. And so there's all kinds of reasons that for certain types of innovation, you need that university buckling. But things that are more broadly software development, et cetera, you know, kids can build apps in high school now. Now, the real barrier isn't the creation, it's the market adoption and who's going to buy it. For example, creating an app is only partway to the success. Something like 75% of the apps in the App Store haven't even had one download. Not even their mother bought it. So this is where maturity, education, general business skills, sales skills, et cetera, this is kind of where the rubber starts to hit the road, where innovation and creation meets kind of general business and maturity skills to actually explode and make growing, lasting businesses. So with that, I think I'll dive a little bit into how we view that at the PSU Business Accelerator. And my understanding is you just wanted a little more background.
Yes, please.
On that. Okay, great. So we celebrated our 10th anniversary at the PSU Business Accelerator last year. It can be easy to think because it's the metro resource that we're overfunded, very fortunate, et cetera. We're funded with a small input by PSU, and largely the balance is really the rents of the full tenants. We have over 200 employees there, 25 to 30 companies at any time, and our decision was to make it a blend of tech, clean tech, and biotech. There's all kinds of good reasons to go with a specialty incubator, and I think Jen covered that. For PSU, which is not a research university until recently, did we even have a research budget, we didn't have a lot of technology spinning out of the university 10 years ago. So it was more sort of intelligent for us to create an environment where the public sector companies could come in, have that closer tethering to the university through the workforce, the hiring of students, the access to university tools, as well as prepare for the spinouts from the university. So we're a hybrid environment. That's a little unusual for a university incubator to have that two-way traffic. So just at a glance, we do have spinouts from all four research universities as well as the private sector. This is pretty significant. The companies there in the 10 years have raised over $150 million. That's a mix of private venture and angel capital, as well as the SBIRs, STTRs that you've heard a lot about. The employment rate, it's had, you know, high, or I would say low two-digit employment growth the sort of the first 3 years that I was there, and we're flattening out because capacity. And we have to graduate the real tigers, or we're not actually doing our job as an incubator. That shows a sample of some of the companies that are or have been resident. We had our heads down trying to make the best possible incubator, and recently, just last year, we're awarded a global top 25 university business incubator by a Stockholm rating agency, which we're really proud of. There's only three others in the U.S. Who were selected for that. So what is the secret sauce? Again, you need that space. We do have six wet labs, but as Jennifer pointed out, we view ourselves almost as the kindergarten to the wet labs, and we want them to have places to graduate too. So we're grateful for Otradi and its expansion. Flexible lease terms when companies size up and size down. Often it's sizing down. You want to do that painlessly. It's the connections, resources, mentoring, similar to what Jennifer mentioned. And really the access to PSU has been just a huge boon. We can trace a lot of student capstone teams in as they get the practical experience, the fire in the belly for innovation and entrepreneurship. But also they get internships and they get hired. So there's a very deep rate of hiring out of PSU through those engagements. We track with our national benchmarks, the National Business Incubator Association. We're tracking in the top tier performance-wise. But the data there is, around four times more likely to succeed if a company has been part of an incubator. I think you heard from Paola Moretto from Nuvola. There she is holding her check. We've got a great track record over the last 10 years, just under half, about 40% of the companies that receive some sort of funding at Angel Oregon, our state's premier angel investment competition, were residents of the PSU Business Accelerator. So a couple of the success stories and how they translate into the broader economy. Giftango was a resident acquired by Incom, an Atlanta-based large company, allowed to grow in Oregon. And this is pretty important. This is part of the big shift that has sort of happened in the last, say 5 years. It used to be that acquirers or venture investors would want companies to move once an investment was made. But we now have some strategic advantages that are likely to leave R&D shops of large acquirers or investments of VCs here and growing. Why? We have a better quality of life, which attracts talent, a lower cost of living, and a lower cost of building a company. So now we suddenly have a strategic advantage by playing to our strengths. So Giftango continues to grow here. One thing we are most proud of is it's sort of the completion of the virtuous circle. When that company was acquired, its founding team did quite well. It was a nice acquisition. And the core team have all become angel investors and mentors, and they are actively investing in the startup scene. So that is what we really want to create, is this virtuous circle. Another great example, just real quick, JAMA started there, just completed a build-out in downtown Portland to host 250 high-paid tech workers in this urban core. 250, that's significant.
Big number.
Jive is a company that went public. They were briefly at the accelerator at the beginning. And Open Sesame, you may have heard of as well. Just a few examples. And quickly, and this is important, and this is a metaphor I've used often, and I'm going to use it again. But we should be building a fire. The startups are kind of the wadded-up pieces of newspaper that catch fire quick, create an instant reaction. But if there's nothing for them to catch on to, they just flame out. Okay? We need to build that twig layer next. And I would argue that twig layer is probably the entrepreneurial support that we're talking about, the accelerators, incubators, et cetera, SRCs. Those twigs are going to die out, too, if they don't catch on to that next layer kindling. Ultimately, the goal is to have a long-burning and sustainable fire and not get into this either-or. Is Kleenex more important than twigs? We need it all. And it's the question of what's the right timing and the ratio of the inputs. So with that, I want to transition into talking about two of our university spinouts that are at the PSU Business Accelerator. One's a medical device spun out from the computer engineering department, and one is a pharma, Design Medics. Just real quickly, those are longer game companies. They're going to take longer. If we're only measuring job creation from them, year by year, that's not going to look so great. But over time, if we're in it for the long haul, you know, those could be some extraordinary opportunities for the state on many levels. So we need to play the short game, and we need to play the long game. So Design Medics, many people have now heard about Design Medics. Again, very successful recipient of SBIR and STTR, working on something super important, not just combating malaria, but drug resistance in, you know, diseases beyond malaria. That's just how we catch fire with the students. That's our translational layer back to the PSU. And I'll point out that PSU has a very high percentage of first-generation college students in attendance, putting themselves through school, working through their education. So there's more statewide, but these are all I could kind of fit on. For now, we work together. We can't afford not to. In addition to the top 25, we were just awarded a Small Business Administration Acceleration Fund grant, and it was an unusual process, and actually Heather received one as well. We got to share that in Washington, D.C. But SBA has realized that they're not going to get their explosive numbers out of simply SBDC-type programs, and they're gravitating toward startups. Okay, and it's our feeling that this was a great way for the SBA to sort of capture the data they need to go back to Congress for their re-ups, because they need, back to the fire, they need the SBDC type growth, small business with a small SB, but they also need the explosive startup growth to package, you know, a cohesive sort of set of results and endeavors. And I think with that, I'll just
thank you
for questions, sir.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Questions. Representative Williams.
I just have a comment. Thank you, ladies, for being here. You're both in my district. If you have not had a chance to visit either of these facilities, you must go at once. They are so impressive.
After the meeting.
We'll do a co-tour.
Yeah, it is really, it's amazing. And having worked at PSU with the students and the faculty who were at the accelerator and Otradi, and it's amazing when you see what's happening in these facilities. And so I want to thank you both for your work and for your commitment to building businesses in Oregon and ensuring that students have access to these kinds of opportunities. It's really it's really amazing stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you. Representative Chair Reed, I had a question on the concept of being able to recapture some of your investment through a stock option, and I'll just lay out a couple of questions. You can respond to it. One, where would the 1% methodology come from? Why 1% versus 10%? And if this was something that we're looking to doing in the future, what type of company-controlled buyback options might be considered in there, meaning that if the company wants to be able to retain that control, one of the trends in most U.S.-based companies is now they're investing in themselves more than they're actually paying dividends. I think that recently flipped, where it used to be dividends, and now it's reinvesting in companies. And so I would like to at least see in that conversation that these companies have the option to buy that back at some level. Once they've paid back what you've invested plus a reasonable interest return on it, so that we're not locked into them forever and if they don't want us to be. So
that's a great point. And also the amount of time it might take to recover money as equity from a bio company could be a very long stream if you held on forever. I think there would need to be a cap where you would basically say this is capped at a certain amount, and that there's a certain round of funding that you exit at. National Business Incubation Association has a lot of standards for this, and we're lucky to have the president emeritus of that foundation now retired here. She was president for 21 years, and she's on our advisory board. So we're looking at best practices from other bio incubators and what they've done, and we're exploring this as an option. I think it would have to be something of a mix of a slightly reduced rent in exchange for this equity as well, because we're not trying to be greedy. We're just trying to ensure that if there's a huge win, that there's some kind of an endowed spirit back into Otrati and OBI, so maybe we could build out more space for more companies who are still on the waiting list. Right now, we are basically floating this as a philanthropic idea with our startups. So as a measure of your goodwill, if you graduate from this program in a huge way, we would love it if you would give back. You could, we could name the lab after you. It could be the Aaron Commemorative Lab forever, you know, a lucky kind of laboratory. So we're floating all sorts of ideas, and we're open to all those. But I do recognize that it's important to have ROI for the state and for these programs.
That's part of the direction that Oregon Inc. gave to the Signature Research Centers to explore this, and it's obviously going to be different based on the different industries and companies and so on. But one of the stories that always kind of sticks in my mind is HD Plus, that started with an Oregon Inc. affiliation, ultimately became very successful, unfortunately, subsequently moved out of the state. But one of the remaining ties is a royalty agreement that still flows back to Oregon State. So there's still that notion of a tie. I don't think we want to restrict the movements and success of a company, but to continue to benefit from the state's initial investment. So I think you're both saying the same thing and trying to find the right mix there. Other questions? One I wanted to ask: how do you decide when a tenant needs to graduate? And is there any disagreement about that?
Angela's been doing this longer than I have. Our longest tenants have just signed their additional one-year lease, so Our longest tenants have only been there a year and a half. But I'm already starting to explore graduation criteria, both good and bad reasons to graduate and how to go about this. So.
Yeah. Chair Reed, I'm happy to take a stab at that one. We have graduated maybe 10 to 12 companies since I've been there. We do have criteria, but they're somewhat loose because, again, what a biotech company needs to go through to meet its milestones is so different than, say, what a tech company would. So we have timelines as rough guidelines, but they're there to be broken for good reason. I'll give you a great example. This is in clean tech. So clean tech is interesting. So biotech takes the time it takes. It's difficult to rush it. Mm-hmm. Tech also, you can go faster. But clean tech is this sort of interesting in between, where depending what it is, it might actually move quite fast. So we have two clean tech companies in the accelerator currently who their need for space is exceeding the firm commitment of their future financing, which is not quite the level for them to build out their own. So they're in this kind of teenage zone, right, where, and we are letting them stay longer and gobble up more space because it could be company killing to force them out on a random deadline when they're at the most important trajectory of what could be, you know, a top business in Oregon. So we need to kind of turn our back and not kick them out just yet, wait for them to have a place to go in order to do that. So that's an example of breaking the rules, I guess, for good reason. But a lot of the others, in terms of graduation, remember, there is a high failure rate with startups. And I feel that having skin in the game for the company is the most honest way for them to look themselves in the mirror every day and decide if they're ready to give it up, if it's not going anywhere. So we have a policy we call the grow or go policy at the accelerator, where there's an automatic rent jump after 1 year to those companies, where it's not quite as much as going to the bigger suite, but it's close enough that if nothing's happening with your business and you're writing that check every day, and now it's a little bigger, you're going to
decide it's time to give it up. So we like things that sort of help people come to their own mm-hmm. conclusion as well, and that's actually been very effective.
Amazing. Okay. Good.
Representative Hayden. Quick question, Chair Reed. Thank you. So we've talked about the companies that are successful. Now let's talk about the many that aren't successful. Two-part question again, and you can answer them. Is there funding from state resources that involve getting patents? And if there is any patents that are procured during this incubating process, does the company that wasn't successful retain that, or do we have part ownership in that patent for the next person that comes along that makes it successful?
Good question.
So far, all of the companies that we have licensed their technologies from the universities that they came from, or they have brought that technology with them. They haven't developed a new patent in our incubator yet.
But it's foreseeable?
It is foreseeable. It takes longer for these guys to develop a new therapy or a new drug or something like that. So they're usually working on an existing seed of something they developed and then licensed from university system. It is possible they could develop something new at the incubator. I haven't looked into that.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the introduction to your good work. Please keep it up, and we'll likely check in again. Our last testimony today comes from David Childers, who is a serial entrepreneur, a tech executive, a number of other things. I'll let him introduce himself too, but I think you're in a good spot to kind of help us wrap up this conversation today and help us transition to the consideration of a number of relevant bills on Friday. So we're glad you're here.
No, thank you for inviting me, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members. I've had the luxury, if you'll allow me, I've had the luxury to listen. So I may have an opportunity to share a little bit with what I've also heard this morning as well. As the chairman said, I am a serial entrepreneur. I am here, for the record, my name is David Childers. I am the Chairman Emeritus of the Technology Association of Oregon. Been involved with the Technology Association of Oregon for a very long time. Resident of Lake Oswego. I have, for the last 22 years, been a CEO of various companies, primarily high-tech, within the state. I've created a couple of very successful startups, done some turnaround, and I've mentored a tremendous amount of young startup companies, and I'm also an angel investor, including an investment in the Portland Seed Fund. So I'm actively engaged with that. I am also an ETIC counselor. So I'm actually involved with the Engineering Technology Industry Council in looking at how we make investments to try to bring forward. Because one of the problems that we deal with in listening to some of the discussion today is that there are really two problems, in my opinion, related to innovation in the state. One is that we are woefully short startup capital. Getting larger funds for a well-developed idea is not too difficult today. We've worked very hard over the course of the last 10 years to eliminate Portland as a flyover or Oregon as a flyover state. As you flew over Oregon to go to Seattle or you flew from Seattle to go to the Bay Area, that we actually, and the Technology Association and others have done a great job of really encouraging investors to understand and view. And I think Angela did a really a good job of pointing out most startups stay in Oregon. We had went through a period of time a number of years ago where there was a misconception that you couldn't grow a sizable business in the state of Oregon. That's just simply not the case. We have the talent, we have the wherewithal, we have the marketing abilities to do that, and we have the right attitude. And you've seen that with $100 million. We've had $300 million exits last year. My old company sold for close to a quarter or a half a billion dollars this year, and you've had that, you know, more a larger sum than that go to Tripwire. So we've proven we can develop and deliver great businesses here in Oregon. But what we lack is that early seed fund money to really kick the entrepreneurial movement forward, and we are woefully short on talent. We simply do not have enough talent in the state. Part of the problem is, and I have to tell you that I'm a newbie here, so you may have two pieces of paper from me because I was also here on behalf of the Oregon Talent Council, because the issue is that we are seeing we're seeing a lot of competition for the same jobs. We are in a state that is highly technical, regardless of what industry that you're looking at. You've seen it this morning. Our biotech, biomedical is using the same electrical engineers, same big data guys that we're looking for the Internet of Things. And for the same people that are in food sciences are looking for those same engineers. And the technology industry is certainly looking for those same engineers. So we are woefully short on talent. Part of the problem that we have, number of things here, and one of the things that I've been lobbying for a long time is to try to encourage our universities, and I think we've done a really good job. I've also been actively involved in creation of the Oregon Center for Cyber Excellence to try to bring more focus to how we can support the cyber issues of our consumers, our small businesses, our technology folks, and our educational institutions to support the need for talent in a very rapidly changing cyber world. The issue is that we have to get to the point in our university systems where we don't look at Oregon as the competitor to Oregon State or Oregon State as the competitor to PSU. We need to do what you've seen with Angela and others and some of the things that we've done with the Center for Cyber Excellence to where that we're getting universities to work together, because we really need to be competing against Stanford and Berkeley and Davis and USC and Austin and other places, and we need that strength in terms of where we are in terms of that. The Technology Association of Oregon also recognized a number of years ago, so we put a number of our members in different places. There are two of my board members at TAO that are on the ETIC Council, and we have three or four members on the STEM board to be able to make sure that we are understanding and keeping industry actively engaged in this conversation. It's one of the beautiful things about where we are in Portland. It is a beautiful place to live, and people move here for a lot of really good reasons, and part of that is we have a community here where it's very easy to give back. Somebody asked a question if mentoring was a problem. No, it really truly isn't. I can get a mentor in a day by making a half a dozen phone calls. If I've got a young CEO or a young COO that's got a problem, or somebody's got a software problem, this community is very good out of the associations to support that, to be able to help us be able to get where we need to go. But we're also looking at things. The TAO has a foundation, which many people don't know, and that foundation supports things like App Camp for Girls, which is 8th grade to high school girls only, developing apps and robotics to be able to help break down some of those barriers. We have Chick Tech. We have the innovation and inclusion. One of the problems that we found was that there was a lot of people out that were that had money to be able to create the enthusiasm for young people to look to migrate toward engineering degrees, science, STEM-related degree programs. But what they ended up with was that they ended up with a bunch of white people, in white males, if you will, in the room. And one of the things that Duane does is to try to work with those groups through the TAO Foundation to ensure that we're getting inclusion in those programs and to introduce into the community where we get people of color, we get people that are in less fortunate circumstances, where we have a better diversity around some of those programs. So TAO is actively involved in that. I believe one of the reasons that I wanted to be in front of you today was the changes that you're suggesting in the Oregon tax credit and for helping software companies, because it is a very tangible thing. Again, we are looking for reasons for to spawn innovation, and an NOL does not necessarily spawn innovation, but the opportunity to actually see that money coming back, as you're proposing, to be able to support and keep that flywheel spinning as those embers burning, if you will, is very important to a small startup environment, and very important to their early stage investors, that they understand that there's some opportunity there for some solidity around where they are.
And I was catching up. Maybe everybody else was ahead of me. NOL, net operating loss.
I'm sorry. Yeah. No, so the net operating loss that you get to carry forward and hopefully someday make so much money that you'll get your used to be. And part of that is that we could sell those. But now the IRS doesn't allow you. You could hold a very large NOL. And if I was acquired and had a couple of $1 million worth of net loss carry forward, I could actually deploy that. So if I was a large company, I could buy a failing company and then I could take and extract that tax. That's no longer capable. So it's not an asset necessarily. It's just simply something on the books that you hope for. What you're proposing to be able to help those companies actually see some return on that investment and be able to continue that flywheel moving forward, very important for a small company. And that's where our innovation needs to come from, is all of these, you know, all of these places around the state. So from my perspective, you know, you're working on a number of things that are right. We have issues related to as I said, to talent. It's probably one of the largest areas that we have. One of the problems that we've had as well is that we haven't really had the maturity in our system to do what I call we formed a cab line. And if you go back and you look at the way some of the older communities of innovation have worked, if you look at Boston or Minnesota, they have taken technology out of their universities. They have built a company. They have elevated that company with venture capital money. They've sold the business at some point or merged that business in. And the people that were part of that startup environment who have now matured 5 or 6 years fall back into the cab line and are waiting for that next innovation to be available so they can come in and pick up and be part of that and to be able to make that work. We're just now starting to see some of these companies. You just had Simple sell for $107 million. Two of their founders left saying, we don't want to be part of a large organization. That's not what we wanted to do. They both started new startups yet again along the same line. We need that cab line moving in the state as well. So, Mr. Chairman, that's my pitch this morning to you. And if there are any questions, I'll be happy to.
Thank you. I think you did a nice job of summing up a lot of what we heard today. The questions for Mr. Childers. Representative Neumann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Silver, when you say that, or Mr. Childers, when you say there's a deficit of talent, where is that? Is that, you said you can find a mentor in a day with half a dozen calls, but is it a shortage of entrepreneurs, or is it a shortage?
Oh, not at all. No, it's a shortage of available talent. There are certain jobs we cannot fill.
So it's
today.
Workforce.
Workforce. It is a workforce issue. There are database engineers, project managers in this state command an amazing sum of money because there simply are not enough of them. We don't have enough. There are a number of places that I can take you, but if Jim Pyro were here, would tell you he doesn't have enough power engineers. There's not enough people coming forward that really understand to be able to support what their needs are. As we look at the healthcare world, as we start to look at IT, and I'm actively engaged in cybersecurity, we do not have enough people trained coming out to support small business today with the needs associated, workforce needs associated with strengthening networks across small businesses in the state. We just don't have enough people graduating with those degrees. And I would go further to say that one of the things that we have to do and we're working hard to do is to try to coordinate some of that curriculum where we're actually getting people graduating with the talent and the skills. And I applaud companies like Intel McAfee, who's committed to Oregon State to do a very large intern program this coming year in engineering, which will allow those students not only to graduate with the right degree, but they'll be able to graduate with 6 or 7 months of actual hands-on experience working in a, you know, working in the career environment that they've chosen.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson? Did you? No, I thought I caught you looking for recognition. Thanks.
Well, I'm always looking for recognition.
Yeah, I know, but for this specific purpose. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
The survey, and I'm sure we'll talk some more as we go forward. So, for the first time in a while, we've managed to exhaust our agenda with a little time to spare.
Wow.
Let's bank these minutes for future use. Anything else to come before the committee today? Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank you for this outstanding panel to put together today. Some of the most, I think, intriguing testimony I've heard in my 3 terms on this committee, so thank you.
Thanks. I don't deserve any credit. These are good people doing good work, and hopefully we'll be able to help them along.
Well,
Representative Gallegos.
I do want to sort of piggyback on that, because I do think you have, bringing this innovation piece to what we've been doing here, there's only a couple of us who are carryovers from this committee, but I do think this is a very invigorating interjection with the innovation piece. So thank you.
Good. Glad to hear it. Thanks.
Can I might take 1 minute?
With it, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Amen what was said. I think this has been very enlightening, very optimistic for the future of Oregon. And I think 2 things, though, that concern me is workforce kept coming up.
Yep.
And really terrified by the comments of one of our presentation people about our education system being third world quality. And so, honorable colleagues, let's get to work.
Yeah.
I was struck by that, too.
Yes.
And so Friday we'll hear some bills that are relevant to this sort of topic. And next week we'll take on workforce in a similar kind of sequence in terms of overview and then bills. I struggled with how to react to that comment as well, recognizing that the education committee that takes on K-12 is not us. But I'm not going to forget that comment either. So I appreciate you highlighting it.
I will just say that's why I'm on both committees, because, and I have also been to Benson as well. And I will give them some credit for trying to rebuild their program. They have a architect program they've just started in the last year. But they need a lot of work, a lot of support, and I think we've been validated here that we're doing the right things and working, focusing on CTE and STEM to kind of help lay the groundwork for to have that workforce that we need.
And thanks for reminding us that you are our bridge to the Education Committee. So.
Scary, isn't it?
Yeah. No, that's not what I meant. I meant that there's a connection, that you can take this message to the Education Committee and work it there, too. Thanks. Okay, we'll close the informational meeting and the hearing, and we'll see you all on Friday morning. We're adjourned. Thanks.
Stunning.
All right.
It's interesting.